Oh man, it's great to have you with us. I know there's been a bit more chat, but we'll look at that a little bit later. Last week we spent some time looking through the next part of 1 Peter, which is the next part of our series on a living in hope. And this morning we're going to be looking at 1 Peter 2, and I'm gonna just turn there now. We'll be from verse 13 onwards. Now, you may or may not know that when I was sort of late teen, I became quite passionate about music. I wasn't in a band, I can't play an instrument, but what I can do is I can DJ. And I spent a lot of my expendable income on records. There's still many in my parents' loft and cupboards. I think there's probably over 1,000 there. And I love dance music. I loved house and garage. And if you're not sure what that is, you think you're just naming things that you own. But I love those types of music. I used to really enjoy mixing and spending time. And I love the songs and the feeling they gave me. And I still quite enjoy it at times. I may turn up the radio in the car to listen to some good tunes. And Kate gets in the car afterwards. She says, "You've got this really loud." I mean, you've got to have it loud. It's dance music. Anyway, for this morning, I was reminded, I called this morning, "Everybody's Free to Do Good." And I was reminded as I thought about that of the song, "Everybody's Free to Feel Good." And this was released in 1991. And I want to read some of the lyrics to you. The chorus says, "Everybody's free to feel good." And it says that on four occasions. Then it says, "Brother and sister, together we'll make it through. Someday a spirit will lift you and take you there. I know you've been hurting, but I've been waiting there for you. And I'll be there just to help, just helping you out whenever I can." Ooh. Then, "Everybody's free to feel good. We are a family that should stand together as one, helping each other instead of just wasting time. Now is the moment to reach out to someone. It's all up to you. When everybody's sharing their hope, then love will win through." Ooh. This was a great song, but actually the message in those lyrics is quite powerful. It's talking about freedom, that we all should be free, and that we should help each other, that we should use our freedom to help each other experience freedom. And this is about feelings. Everybody's free to feel good. Well, actually, what Peter wants to say to us in his letter is that we are free to do good. Now, last week, if you didn't listen, we looked at the passage, which is quite famous, really, and the song that we started with is based on some of those. And it says that you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. And Peter's spoken about who the believers are, who those gathered across modern-day Turkey, then Asia Minor, who they are. He's spoken about, this is who you are. This is who you are because of what Jesus has done. You are free. You are the people of God. You are chosen. You are valuable. You're precious. You're a holy nation. But he wants to talk to them about actually what does that mean now? It's not that you're free and just do what you like and don't care about anyone else. Actually, you're free to do good. You're free to be a force of good in the world you live in. And this morning we're going to look at sort of what he says, particularly, this will take a few weeks to unpack, but we're going to look at particularly what he says about the emperor and what he says to slaves or servants. And we'll come across those and deal with them as we engage with those parts of the text. So I want to read from verse 13, and it says this, and this is because of what Jesus has done. you can read, you can pick up the Bible and you can pick up some good life lessons, you know, that you can do good to others, that you can, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. You can pick up good lessons, but the reason for all of these things, the reason God calls us to these things is because of what Jesus has done. It's all founded in that. We don't make ourselves right with God because we follow any of the commands in the Bible. We're made right through Jesus to then do good. And it's really key that we could get to some of this stuff and think, oh, that's very wise and very, oh, yeah, I like that. But actually, this is about a response to what Jesus has done on the cross by making us a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. So, verse 13, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to the governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honour everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honour the emperor. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing. When mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it if, when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if, when you do good and you suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you as an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he reviled, he did not revile in return. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. I want to say two things really from this passage. And the first one is that we should honour others, especially leaders. The motivation for this, what Peter says, is actually be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor supreme or the governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. This is because of Jesus, because of God, because of his work in our lives that we choose to be subject to human institutions. Now, what we've got to remember is the context of Peter's readers. In this time, probably about the 60s AD, what happened to most of Asia Minor, lots of the Middle East, areas of Europe, they were all under the Roman rule. They'd all been taken over by the Romans. And they weren't living in their own land in one sense. They were in their own land, but they were under the Romans. And the Romans weren't always very nice. We know that from history. They would use their power to subjugate the people. And Peter here is telling them that they should honour the emperor. Now this is quite challenging. It's radical to honour the emperor. And why does Peter say this? Why is Peter concerned about their conduct and how they relate to those in charge? And the reason is because Peter is bothered about the extension of the gospel going forth. He speaks about that their conduct, live as people For this is the will of God, that by doing good, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. He's concerned that they live good lives, that their lives shine forth and are a witness to the world around them. He's deeply concerned that actually they're doing good, that they're a force for good in their nation, where they're under the oppression of the Romans. And I think this is quite challenging for us today. Whenever we read things like this, we think, but. And there's, when we come to verse 17, it talks about honouring everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honour the emperor. There is a fear for God. There is a reverence that God is higher than the emperor. I'm not saying just do everything that the emperor says. It says, actually, we honour the emperor, but we fear God. And if what God calls us to goes against what the emperor tells us to do, then we fear God, we follow God. And this is where that we need to be sure about what's God calling us to, what should we stand up for, and what should we go with. And it's really key. But I think for us in this day, and particularly in this nation, this is a challenge for us. How do we honour, we don't have an emperor, but how do we honour the Prime Minister? How do we honour those who are in government? I've been thinking about this a bit this week, and I think obviously there's the thing of obedience. Are we good citizens? Do we follow what the government asks of us? Even in this time, you know, are we seeking to follow the guidance that they give to us, or are we rebelling out? Do we follow what they say? But I think actually there's a challenge to us, and we live in a society where we're honouring is not really a big thing. In other cultures, you see the honouring the elderly, honouring those in leadership is really, really important. And that's not for us here. We could actually be quite critical. I've been thinking about this. It's very easy for us to be critical in this nation. Very easy to be critical of everything, to have an opinion about everything. And actually, we can share that now more widely than ever before. If you're on social media, you can share your opinion, you can share your critical opinion on what's going on very easily. And you can do it almost without thinking. Oh, I'm fed up with this, and on it goes, and then it's publicised to your world, to those you know. And I think there's a challenge for us here. I've been aware that when thinking about some of these things and how the government have dealt with things, that actually there needs to be within me a humility. Would I want to run the country in this time? No. Would my actions stand up against those who are going to pick them to pieces? No. And I think we need to just have that recognition in our heart that there are things we must stand against, things that are against God, things that we must stand against, but there are some things that we should be seeking to actually honour and recognise. Hey, you know what? The government have had a hard time. This has not been an easy thing to deal with. And we should honour them. And one of the ways we can honour them is through prayer. We can lift them up, and we're encouraged to do that, to pray for those who are responsible, to pray for kings, those in high places. And that's one of the things we can do. And we can just check ourselves when we think we're just going to be critical. We're just going to just check yourself and just say, actually, no, I need to think of it and convey something different to this world. Because actually, there's so much critical stuff out there. Actually, can we shine our light? Can we show something different to the world around us? The second thing that we find in this passage, I love that verse 17, just before we move on. Honour everyone. Love the brotherhood. That's about the church. Fear God. Honour the emperor. If we all live like that, it would really make an amazing difference. If we all look to honour others, to see the best in them. Not to see the worst, to see the best in them. And to look to honour others, it would really change things, I believe. I know that from my life. If I would live like this, it would really change. And I seek to do that. The second thing I think comes from this passage is to respect others even when they don't deserve it. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. One of the questions that we have to ask of the Bible is why the issue of slavery is not addressed. And that's not an easy question to answer in one sense. And for us, our minds are cast back to slavery from the 18th and 19th century. That's where our minds are cast back to. Slavery in the ancient Middle East was different. Many people could be slaves. They weren't necessarily taken from their homeland, although that might happen. But you could be well-educated and be a slave. If you fell into financial hardship, there wasn't credits or anything, you would have to sell yourself into slavery. There were some rights, but there was lots of abuse. And slavery in any form is wrong. It really is. But what we have in our New Testament is, after the Gospels, after Jesus, after Acts, is their letters written to Christians in specific situations. And we have to remember that Christianity was in a minority. And in a minority, until Constantine, really, Christianity was in the minority. And actually, to call them to stand up against some of these things just wasn't possible. And it wasn't on the heart of Peter. Peter, we can see that actually his motivation is that the gospel goes forth, that the most important thing, that people get themselves right before God. And that's what he's writing for. He's writing, you need to live your lives differently from the world around you, because that points to the fact that there is something different about you, that you're living not for now. You are aliens and exiles. You're living for the future. You're living for the kingdom of God. And it's into that context that he writes. So we would agree, and if you look at history, actually, although Christians have done some things that aren't great, actually the stand against slavery was led by William Wilberforce, and he was a Christian. He was motivated by the belief that everyone is made in the image of God. Just a little side there, but I think it's important that we engage with these questions and we engage with this, because this affects the way we see our world. But Peter calls his readers to endure even when they suffer unjustly. He says, what credit is it if you sin, if you do something wrong and you're beaten and you endure? What credit is it? Well, you're punished for what you've done wrong. But if you endure when you're doing good, this is worthy of reward. It's a gracious thing in God's eyes. It's worthy of reward. And why does he call them to this? He's calling them because the way you respond in situations when you are pressured on all sides shows something about who you are and what you believe. Thinking about, you know, where it talks about Jesus, that when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten. And if you like an action film, you know, as it comes to the end and they're about to put things right, what happens to the person who's done all the wrong? They're threatening while they're about to, face their doom. They're threatening. And that's what happens often when people are faced in situations of death, is that actually the inside, what's really on the inside, it shows forth. And yet we see with Jesus that didn't happen. I want to introduce you to one of my favourite of people from the Reformation. His name's Dirk Willems, and he was an Anabaptist, which meant that he believed that you should be baptized after you become a believer. And he was imprisoned for his belief. And what happened? One night he managed to escape, and it was cold. And he ran across the moat around the castle where he was imprisoned. And as he escaped, they followed him. They chased after him. And Dirk Willems was chased. And those who were chasing him, one of those fell through the ice. And Dirk Willems turned back and rescued this man. Now, Dirk Willems probably got across the ice because he'd been in captivity. He hadn't eaten well for a long time, whereas the guards probably had eaten well, and he fell through. Dirk Willems rescued this guard. What was the result for him? Well, he was put back in prison, and eventually he was killed for his faith. What motivated him? He'd seen something about the love of God. He'd seen the way that Christ had died for him, that he was willing to turn back, not consider his own freedom, but to consider someone else. I think this is a powerful image for us about how we respond in different situations, that we respect others even when they don't deserve it. And Peter says that actually by this we may win. We may win some. People may see that. I don't know if you're a cricket fan or not, but it probably didn't go past you that a few years ago the Australian cricket team bought some sandpaper and they applied it to the cricket ball during a test in Cape Town. The three involved particularly were all banned from cricket for a year. The coach stepped down. It was a huge hoo-ha, and the Australian cricket team was in a terrible shape, really. They weren't respected at all across the world. And I've recently watched a documentary on this. It's well worth it if you've got Amazon Prime, called The Test. And Justin Langer takes over as coach, and one of the main things he wants to change is he says, I want to change. We are not even loved by our country. Our country is disgusted by us. And we want to be respected by the world because of our conduct. We want to be respected. And about a year into his tenure, the Australian cricket team has to come to the UK for the Ashes. And Steve Smith, one of the guys who was the captain when this sandpaper incident happens, he comes, and him and David Warner are particularly booed as they enter the cricket ground. And they're booed, and almost every time they come out. And Steve Smith goes about his task of batting particularly well. He's a great batsman. And what's interesting is his conduct throughout. He just tries to not respond to the crowd, but try to just do the right thing. It's well worth watching if you've never watched it before. But on the final test, when he leaves the field, the whole crowd stands and applauds this man. Why do they applaud? Because they've seen the way that he has changed, the way that he's engaged in the sport, the way that he's overcome some of those things. They applaud his conduct. They applaud his skill. And I think that's what Peter's saying here, actually, that we can win people over if we don't respond as the rest of the world does. When we're faced with hardship, when you have a terrible day at work and your boss is being totally irrational and asking things of you, and you respond differently, rather than just moaning about everything, you respond differently. That speaks to people. And that's what Peter's saying. And why do we do this? Why should we do this? Well, actually, Peter leads us back to Jesus. He takes us back to him. And so many of these verses are just littered with the insight from Isaiah 53. And I'd just like to turn there and just read a few verses. This is a prophecy before Jesus came, speaking about him and what he would do. And it says this: for he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and as one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his stripes we have been healed. Or we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. This is Jesus. This is what he did. He was oppressed. He was convicted for a crime that he didn't do. And as they spat at him, as they hurled abuse at him, he was silent. He didn't respond. He knew he was living for something different. And it's by his wounds that we're healed. It's by his wounds that we're changed. And Jesus calls us to follow in his footsteps, to suffer for doing good. And if you're suffering, if you're facing hard times at the minute, I hope this encourages you to keep going, to keep enduring, knowing that you are living for someone who is outside of all this. You're living for the just judge who will judge fairly. You're living for the shepherd and the overseer of your soul. You're living as an exile, an alien in this land, waiting for what's coming before you. I want to encourage you with that this morning. And Peter believed that for the believers, for the church in Asia Minor, for those churches across that area, he believed that it was key that they understood who they were in Christ so that they could live this radically different life from the world around them. Jesus is our example of how to deal with those who don't respect us for what we're doing. Now, this doesn't mean that we can't campaign, we can't do other things, we can't get ourselves out of situations if we can. If you look at other parts of the Bible, it's quite clear that you are able to do that. But when you're facing times, just know that God is with you and that you are looking for his reward and his approval.